it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a...
Here you go. Home run, Cal Raleigh. Home run call, Aaron Goldsmith. Why is it so important? Why is it the home run call of the day? Why is another Cal Raleigh homer being identified as the be-all, end-all when it comes to home runs? Well, because he tied Mickey Mantle for the most home runs in a season by a switch hitter. That's number 54. Also, maybe to celebrate the fact that Seattle Mariners are now in first place. It is the first place Seattle Mariners. Yep. They take a game lead over the Houston Astros, who, by the way, have the biggest series in all of baseball, I believe, coming up in terms of the next 3 days. And that is against the Texas Rangers, who are just two games in back of them and obviously vying for tiebreakers and all that good stuff. So, Houston versus Texas, the biggest of the big when it comes to the next few days in baseball. All right, well, speaking of the next few days in baseball, not only next few days, next 2 weeks, we have 2 weeks left in the regular season. 2 weeks. So what does that mean? It means a lot because there's only 2 weeks left. And also, it gives you some perspective. We want to give you some perspective of what it means. So I went back and I actually looked a couple years ago at the team that won the World Series. That would be the Texas Rangers, and what their life looked like with 2 weeks left. And what it looked like was they had just finished a 4-game losing streak. So woe was them. They had a 2.6% chance to win the World Series. They still were just slightly out of the playoff picture, but just slightly. They were tied actually with the Mariners, who didn't make the playoffs, as you remember. The Texas Rangers had a 63% chance to make the playoffs, according to FanGraphs. So what does that mean? I'm trying to paint the picture here. With that four-game losing streak, just slightly out of the playoffs, a lot can happen in 2 weeks, and the Texas Rangers showed that. They obviously made the playoffs. They obviously won the World Series. A lot can happen in the playoffs. But now it is rubber meets the road time. It is crunch time. It is fork in the road time. It's all of the above. And we want to paint the picture for you. So who do we go to? We go to a couple guys who know what's what. And also, I would say absolutely top 10 when it comes to guests. Baseball isn't boring. Maybe top five. Maybe top five. That's how good they are. We're going to kick things off with Luke Weaver. Luke Weaver, obviously relief pitcher for the Yankees. And the conversation is really about all the feels of this time of year and how it is different and how it just turns on a dime, how the switch is flipped, all of it. And he doesn't just give stock answers. They are awesome answers. That is awesome perspective. It really is. And that's why I think Luke might be top five. I think he might be top five guests for Baseballs and Boring. He's that good. And I think that you're really going to enjoy it. And all after him, I'm going to give you a staple in Baseballs and Boring this season, Lucas Giolito, to talk about his perspective of things. And also, obviously, anytime we sit down with Lucas, it's a good time because we can talk about anything. But we kick things off with Luke Weaver, relief pitcher for the New York Yankees, and probably and a candidate, certainly a candidate for a guy who might be getting the final out of the season. Who knows? All right. Well, here's Luke.
There's no human being I'd rather be talking to right now. Lucas, I'm sorry, I just talked to Lucas Giolito.
There you go.
Luke Weaver.
Man, people call me that.
Do they? They call you Lucas?
They do. They think I have a Hispanic background and my name is Lucas.
Really? Why?
Nah, I think people just assume that Lucas is the normal name, and then Luke is like a nickname.
Luke is your name.
It's just, yeah, through and through. But a lot of people who are Lucas go by Luke. So,
what's your middle name?
Alan. So,
yeah,
just a normal standard.
So, there's no nickname?
Do you have Weave or Dreamweaver, whatever. But
how long did Dream stick?
Pretty early. I would say all the way from like high A back and when I got into professional baseball. You know, I had the walkout like for my freshman year in college. Yeah, but it was a little slow at the time, and I think I needed a little bit more bump. So I went away from it, and then jumped into my life for one day jogging in the middle of the season in 2024. I didn't ask for it. I didn't pick it. It just magically appeared as I started jogging in.
What was that? Which one?
The Dreamweaver song.
Oh, the Dreamweaver.
Yeah. So you think about from 2012, my freshman year of college, and then I didn't use it all the way up until I randomly jogged out of the fence to go into a game.
And they did it.
And they did it, yeah. They put a little show, or I guess whatever.
Yeah, the life thing. Yeah. Which is next level. It's better.
It's cool. Yeah. They gave me a cool one this year. I didn't, you know, people don't realize we don't ask for those things. At least I don't think we do.
Yeah, let's stop you.
Yeah.
I do know guys who have taken great ownership.
I was just about to pause myself. Say, that might be true for others, but I know in New York, most of the guys do not, unless they're not telling me the truth.
No, well,
I did not.
I think there's a 50% chance. I would, you know, like, why not? But anyway, so Dreamweaver, that's good. So I'm glad we came to that.
Yeah, we got there.
You said something after Saturday's game that sort of was like, and first of all, I always enjoy our conversations. And,
of course.
And you know, about how it's starting to feel like postseason, right? And I get it, right? Full Fenway Park, you know, middle of September and everything else. I think that last time we talked a lot about how your postseason run and your World Series impacted you as a pitcher now. But now I'm sort of wondering, is it almost like, oh, yeah, that's what this is like. Remember, it's like you obviously go through spring training. You go through, and so now you land in the middle of September. Was it almost like, okay, now this is what it feels like?
Yes, and what I will say to that is going to the pinnacle of, or in reaching the World Series is about as high as we can go, right? And outside of winning it. But that was part of the figuring out. You get into spring training, everything slows down, halts pretty quick. And then you're building back up. And then so you're in those games. You're in the beginning of the season, and those games aren't the other games. And so you're having to kind of refocus and kind of remotivate in a way what it looks like to get out on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
You can't replicate what the postseason's like, especially World Series outings. And there's times in the year, right, the ebbs and flows, the goods and the bads, where you get into a situation where, you know, the game is out of reach, or, you know, you're behind or whatever it is, and they don't supply you with the same type of energy, you know. And I've run into some of those moments, some really recently. And so a game like against the Red Sox here at Fenway in a big playoff-style game to determine how we go down the stretch, really brings back those feels. It really...
Do you even realize it? Like,
No, I realize it.
No, I mean, did you realize that that was like, it wasn't there? You know, it was like...
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, after a certain amount of time, it kind of gets stale a little bit, which is crazy to say, because anytime you come into a major league game, you have it.
It's human nature.
But there's levels to it. And I think I, as someone who's never played in the playoffs up until last year, and especially was pitching in some pretty big moments, it was like a realigning of what this game, it just was to another level. Yeah. And it was something I didn't realize. And I've, the whole year, I've honestly had to fight against moments that are a little more stale than others. And yeah, so as we approach the stretch and then hopefully make the playoffs and do that, it's kind of just tapping back in to being supplied into the atmosphere. Because one thing I feel like when I go out there, I have an intensity about myself, but the environment brings an intensity as well.
Can you feel that when you, I'm sorry.
I just say sometimes it doesn't match it.
Yeah.
And you kind of play down, you kind of come a little bit underwhelmed in a sense, like your body doesn't kind of react the same way. And then there's times where it supplies it a lot and you're not having to do much because everything is just jacked up and ready to go. So it's just about controlling your mind at that point. So there's a one extreme to the other.
Could you, so when you land at that spot, Fenway Park, middle of September, could you feel that in your body and your mind? I know that's like a big, slow, sort of cliche question.
1,000%. Last night, the Fenway Park in this series is, I wouldn't say it's the only moment, right? There's been plenty of moments, bases loaded, no outs, whatever. I've gone through some stuff during the season, but there's moment by moment, and they're not in huge doses. Dosages, but as you come down the stretch, it feels like all those moments collect a little bit differently just because of the environment, the timing, and the stretch of where we're going and heading to. And when you're in the middle of June and July and even early in the season, it's more of like, you know, you have a long way to go. So when you're running a marathon, you're trying to pace yourself.
Yeah.
And when you get to the final stretch, you're not necessarily trying to change your pace, but you're motivated and your mindset kind of grasps that finish line and you just want to go strong.
So believe it or not, because I'm not, I bring it back to myself, so I apologize. I run 6 marathons.
Oh, yes. Love that.
If I can do it, anyone can do it. And so, but you get to, I love doing the heart rate thing, right? You're going off your heart rate. So the marathon, you're treating it like, I got to keep my heart rate like, hold on, I got to keep my heart rate low. And then you get to mile 16 and it's not an option. It is what it is, right?
That makes sense.
And this is the best analogy I can give, right? So it's like, here you go. Like, this is it. Like, I'm the pacing element of this is gone once you come to mid-September, right?
Yeah,
I think so.
It's all mental. I mean, you're speaking from that experience. The body is just whining and excuse-making, right? Your brain is just telling yourself you got to quit, right? But you got to overdrive it. And I think that is something that I've been very aware of in the last week or so is no matter how you feel, no matter how that physically is going, your mind can just overdrive those moments as if you're running a marathon.
Yeah.
And the moments you're out there and you just don't feel like you're on at 100%. You don't feel like you're throwing well. And there's just a crazy part about just driving into that mindset and just being like, I'm putting the ball where I want to, when I want to, and nobody in the world is going to change that. And it's incredible the things that happen. It's not always perfect, but you realize that when you get done, you have a proudness about just leaving it all out there.
Yeah.
The conviction is just, you know, at 100%, you lay down at that night and you just go, you know what? I didn't strike out the side or whatever. Yeah, I gave up a couple runs, but it was like, man, was I just 100% all in? And I think those are moments that stack the best over the long term and get you to more successful.
Such a great analysis. And I'm going to mention Zach Allen's name twice here.
Okay.
We just had him on last week. And one of the things he said, because he pitched 243 innings a couple of years ago and throughout the postseason, and he said it wasn't my body. He's like, it was my mind. When it was over, I just wanted to lay down my mind, you know, and like that part of it, like is the good of the mind, you know, it must have been exhausting, you know.
To his point, obviously that was an amazing year for Zach, a friend that I played with.
Yeah.
And I know what he's talking about. Like and it was different, right? Starter, he had a lot more load, but the moment is the same.
But the intensity,
of the intensity, the body is along for the ride, and you're supplying it with all the recovery, everything you need to get it in shape. But it took a long time all the way into the season where my mind had to like finally get back to being sparked and kind of being relit and being like, hey, buddy, it's time to go.
Yeah.
Because there was just so much mental rest that was needed from all the thinking and focus and everything you put in. And the body is super resilient. And I think people neglect the mind and how much focus it takes every day. And, you know, even when we're looking at our phone and we're just killing our eyes sometimes, and then we're going, there's just things to stack up. Are we sleeping well enough? Are we getting everything we need to recover? And it took a long time. And, you know, you feel like you build all of it back up just to do it again.
No. Yeah. Voluntarily. You're here.
We are here. And, you know, they say you blink and, oh, I can't believe we're already here. Yeah. That's just not true.
No.
But it is funny how you do look up and you kind of reignite that fire a little bit and you just go, all right, we are here. So while I'm here, let's just have fun with it and let's go all
out.
Up
to the tank again.
Exactly.
Let's go.
Up to the tank, because this is what we're meant to do. We're playing a game for so many reasons. But the biggest one, I think, that aligns through all the players in the big leagues is we just want to win. We're competitive people. We want to win first and foremost. And then in doing that, the other things kind of just fall and take care of themselves, however need be.
The other thing with Zach was we were talking about crowds. And you mentioned, like, the Fenway crowd. And I'm fascinated by dynamics of bullpens, about how, you know, like, the Fenway bullpen, the Philadelphia bullpen. I don't know how you guys do it, man.
That's the ruthless.
It's
some ruthless
like,
bullpen.
It's great. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's like,
fans bring it.
Oh, but you're in a shoebox. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. You always say it's like you're like zoo animals.
Yeah,
right?
you're probably in a closure.
And people are, you know, wanting balls, and they're wanting to yell at you and tell you you stink and get you unmotivated.
Yeah.
Then you got some good ones in there. It's like, hey, you're the man, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, to however that may be, and it goes in all.
But you are right in the belly of the beast there.
Right
but
in the belly of the
heat,
beast.
But we're talking about crowds, about the playoff crowds and how there are certain crowds that want to enact their will on what's going on in the game. So I think the Yankee Stadium in the playoffs like that. I think Fenway Park's like that. And I think Philadelphia's like that. And what I told him, I said, I was walking around Philadelphia, four rows deep is standing room, and the fourth row were reacting to every single pitch, right? So what he said, and he didn't disagree, he's a Philadelphia guy, but he said that it was almost became white noise, though. And so, I'll be interested from your perspective, because you went through it last year. Is it that way? Or because he said it's almost easier than it is to pitch in a minor league game where you have the one guy heckling you.
Yeah.
Does it become white noise? Or
yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I think what people need to understand is the white, like, you see people, you hear people. It's not that, like, oh, I'm out there and it's just like, what is it, dude? The guy, Kevin Carson.
Fear mechanism.
This
is one of my favorite.
Everything goes side. That's not what happens.
Yeah.
At least not for me.
Yeah.
But what happens is when I'm in the right mindset, it has a white noise feel. Mm-hmm. Like, I hear the crowd. I see the people, but I'm not singularly focused on the sound or a person.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as that thought comes into your mind of, oh, what are they saying? Or, oh, I see somebody and I'm like singled them out with my eyes on the mound, then you are in a bad mind place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're in a place where you don't necessarily have the best chance to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're on, like Zach has mentioned, there is that white noise. It's I'm staring into the crowd, but I'm not secretly focused on anybody. I'm not focused on the sound of anything, but I hear it. I'm taking it in.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's a calmness to that and you're in that state of mind, that's where you're locked in and you have the best chance to succeed. And whether it's good or bad, that's the results of baseball. But I always think that you have to be focused right there in the moment with your in tune with yourself and at the task at hand.
Mm.
Everything else is just you're just floating through time, and all of it is just like, you know, just a mental background.
Yeah.
It's not the painting that I'm staring at into detail. It's just being in art gallery with so many paintings and there's not one I'm focused on.
Yeah.
But I know where I'm at, I know what's in there, and I see through my peripherals and everything. But all I'm focused on is just my feet are going.
Isn't it amazing? A year ago, if we sat here a year ago, you probably wouldn't be able to have that perspective, right?
I would not.
Yeah, that's what's great about it.
I wouldn't. I mean, I could tap into parts of it.
Yeah.
I could give you, you know, connected pieces to it.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't make full sense because the silver lining is being able to go do it and to perform in it and to just get to live it. And that's something that I get to take away and I get to explain and try to make sense of it. But the best part is when a guy like Zach Allen speaking on it, I know exactly what he's talking about, finding it. And those only come in those moments.
Well, I appreciate it, man. So I'm always inspired. Always ready to run through a wall.
Thank you.
Told you. Awesome stuff from Luke Weaver. Awesome stuff. All right, well, speaking of awesome stuff, Lucas Giolito never disappoints, ever, 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 ever. So what I'm going to do...
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Is I'm going to give you Lucas Giolito in conversation, sit down with him. And we talked about a few different things. And you're going to hear at the beginning of it, we talk about the new Red Sox pitcher, rookie Conley Early, who was just called up, made one start, 11 strikeouts, really, really good. And I am sort of fascinated by the fact that Conley Early went to West Point for a couple of years. And so what that does is it starts that conversation about how Lucas talked to Conley Early about going to West Point, much like I did. And then the discipline that translates into scouting reports. And then how Lucas Giolito knew nothing about scouting reports when he was first called up. And how Max Scherzer taught him about scouting reports. All of this within this conversation, along with some other stuff. So I'm going to talk to Lucas Giolito for you. Or actually, he's going to talk to me for you. And then right after Lucas is finished, I'll throw in another conversation I had with Conley Early just to give you perspective of that as almost like a bonus to punctuate this entire podcast, which I really, really enjoy, really, really am proud of. And I just thank everybody for listening to it. And I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed doing it. All right. Well, here's Lucas Giolito followed by Conley Early.
There's only one person on the planet I'd rather be talking to right now more than Lucas Giolito.
Who's that?
Lucas Giolito. It's a trick question. I'm trying to think of new
words. That's a bad bit.
There's nobody on the planet I'd rather be talking to than Lucas Giolito.
Let's get it.
You've done it so many times, I can't. But it still always gets a smile. That's all. The only purpose of this whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, did you know? So here's the trivia question about your new teammates. All right? Conley Early.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know he went to West Point?
Yep.
You did?
Yeah, he went there for 2 years, and he went to Virginia for 1 year.
Did you ever ask him about it?
Yeah, we talked about it, yeah.
Ooh, what did he say? Because I just talked to him about it.
I'm
fascinated by people who go to West Point.
It's cool. I had a couple friends in high school that went there. It's intense. I was asking him, when you're there as a student-athlete, like, do you get to do less of that, you know, Army stuff? And the answer is yes.
Oh, it is.
There's certain things that you don't really have to partake in because you're busy with, like, practices and games and things like that. But, yeah, that's about it. And I asked why he didn't want to finish up there. He said something about the coaching staff kind of shuffling around. And so he ended up doing his last year at Virginia. And
I just asked about making his bed. Very simple, like, but actually, you know, this is what I asked him, which I think you might be interested in, is that I asked him because I heard about how he was really prepared for his first start.
Yes.
Right? And so immediately I thought, I bet one had to do with the other, maybe even if it's like 15%, you know what I'm saying?
I bet, the discipline from being an Army school is going to carry over and translate to your professional life for sure.
Yes.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, I heard he came to like the pregame meeting. He had his own notes. He was very locked in, and you know it showed. Showed out there.
Is that what you did your first start?
No. No.
Well, what was that like? Who do you go? I don't even know.
My first start?
Yeah.
It was against the Mets. That was a national.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you were you just like your mind was going all over the place?
I didn't even know what scouting was.
You really? Did?
Yeah, Scherzer was taught me about it that year.
He did?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like it's in minor leagues then you didn't scout really?
No.
That was 2018? What was your debut? I should know this.
16.
All right. 2016. So that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
So what did when Scherzer start? So he would just sit down. Okay, let me little Lucas Giolito. Let me tell you a little bit about scouting. Or
yeah, I want to say it was like after one of his outings. They had. I want to say the Nationals did it where like the starting pitcher on his day four would be like inside the video room. This is when we were allowed in the video room during the game. Be like in the video room doing a chart and charting the pitchers. Very old school. Or maybe they were just having me do that because I was young. I don't know. And I was like charting Scherzer's game. He threw a gem and he came right in the video room after he was done and was like showing me this is why I did this in this at bat. And then his third at bat, I did this. I was sequencing, right. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool.
And then do you like that? I mean, was it like something that you latched on to right away?
Somewhat.
Can I give you my analogy or my experiences? Because it always comes back to me.
Okay.
So I interned at NESN. Right?
Yeah.
The NESN studios used to be in Fenway Park, like up there. Mm-hmm. You know what my job was? Counting pitches. That's how long ago.
Counting pitches?
Counting pitches for the starting pitchers. Like, there's nowhere else you could find that, but you had to have the intern count pitches.
So you would just sit there with a...
Yes, and I tried to like take it next level by identifying the pitch that he even asked me to.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, I'm just talking about the evolution of me. So yeah. Again, it all comes back to me. But so speaking of what this, can you imagine, so in this baseball, so here you have Peyton, you have Conley, you have, you know, these guys, you have in the Mets, you have three guys that could potentially be the first time in history that ever that guys make major league debuts and start in major league postseason game. Can you imagine like what that is, and how have you experienced guys being dropped in, and like making their debut, and then saying, "Okay, now go get them in the postseason."
Crochet,
right?
Yeah, right.
So, what was that like?
Electric.
Yeah, I talked to him about this.
He was like 20, 21. As far as like mentally and emotionally, he was like deer in the headlights.
Yeah, he said he sat in the corner, didn't want to ask any questions.
Yeah, he was like, holy crap, how did I get here so fast? But that was because his stuff was so good that we needed it in the pen. And yeah, his personality was completely different than it is now.
Yeah, well,
like you said, he sat in the corner, he didn't talk to anybody. I think he was... There was none of like the humor that he shows now and how, you know, fun he makes things. So, that's just part of like, I was kind of the same way. I definitely muted my personality a lot when I first got called up. I think that's part of it. When you get called up young, there's, you can feel a little bit scared or whatever it is. I'm not seeing it so much these days. I don't know. It's something about our team, our org. It's a very welcoming environment up here. The veterans, we do a good job. We get along with the younger guys great. You know, we try and make it a nice environment to show up and just be yourself and play. So I'm not seeing that. And maybe it's a testament to these guys that we brought up this year. Their level of maturity is just very high for their age.
I think it's generational, too.
I mean, I do.
I think it's like finally people, maybe we've talked about this, I don't know, but we've finally come around to understand that if a guy is getting called up, especially in September, you need that guy. You need it selfishly. You need him for you. You need him for your team. You need him for success. So in what world is it a good idea to make him feel uncomfortable?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it took a long time to get there, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, you're talking about, like, hazing culture.
Yeah. I mean, that's the extreme of it. I mean, but, like, in September, no one's hazing anybody, I don't think. Maybe they are.
Well, that's when it would be the most prevalent, you know, rookie dress-up and things like that. But that was always in good fun. I've heard more stories about, you know, veteran players being outwardly mean to rookies and younger guys than I've witnessed. Maybe I'd say I kind of came up in the generation where those things were probably changing a little bit.
Yeah.
And now, you know, the thing is, as long as you show up and you're like
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You bring a positive energy. It's like, keep going, do your thing. You know, you want to be comfortable and feel, you know, ready to go. You don't want to be like going out on the mound, looking over your shoulder, worried about saying or doing the wrong thing. That's not an environment that I think is conducive to success.
So the last thing is so now in this final 2 weeks, do you feel like you've been through this before? Do you feel like everyone, when you show up to the park, does it feel different? Does it almost feel like the postseason now, is what I'm saying?
No.
Okay.
No. I wouldn't say it feels like the postseason now, but it's not the postseason. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember in 20, clinched a playoff spot. We were, at the time, I think, leading the division. And once we clinched the spot, it was like a collective, like, ah, nice. We made it to the postseason. And then we played like shit for a couple weeks. And we dropped down to like the final wild card spot. And then went and lost to the A's. And, yeah, I think that there's a difference between the postseason and the push for the postseason. They're similar types of feelings, but they are different.
All right, see, that's why I asked.
Yeah.
I'm here to be educated.
Yeah,
thank you.
I think it's important to
identify the two.
Identify, and it's like, yeah, we want to get to the postseason and play meaningful baseball in October, but it's not just a given because we've had a relatively successful season up to this point. Like, then now's the go time.
Now's go. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There's no human being I'd rather be talking to right now more than Conley Early for the 2 Minute Grill. So I was curious, probably haven't been asked since you've been called up. I don't even know, maybe in Worcester, but you went to West Point initially, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So the fact that you called me sir tells me you went to West Point. And so I'm just wondering how, and I know that you moved on and went to Virginia from that, but like how that has influenced you in terms of discipline and preparation and things like that.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, it all started at West Point. Them just giving me a shot to go there and play baseball and also enjoy the school, enjoy the military stuff, and just learn a lot about myself, really prepared me just for, you know, the schedule that, you know, a professional baseball player goes through every single day and throughout the whole entire year. So just, you know, waking up every single day and having to be in
making
a certain
your
uniform,
bed, yeah.
Yeah, making your bed, making your room look spotless, having that checked every single day, and then also being out for formations, looking the right way, looking the part. And then obviously in the summer trainings, just staying on top of your physical self, and then also just the mental strength that all those challenges bring during the Army fitness training, and all those different things that go into it for your summer training has definitely prepared me for this.
So when I heard, you know, before your first start about your preparation and your studying and how they were really, really like blown away by how you were prepared going in, I don't know if this is hyperbole, but immediately I thought back to all the things that you were talking about here. I don't know if that's how you were in high school, but if that was sort of where the foundation of like the preparation you had coming in that first start was.
Yeah, I feel like my parents raised me the right way. So I think it started at a young age, but also just, you know, I had my dad and both my grandparents on both sides were in the military, and then my brother went to the Air Force Academy, so definitely runs in the blood. And I was just taught from a young age, you know, you got to keep your head down and just go to work, do the things that you're supposed to do, and stay on top of it and be as prepared as possible. So when you do get into a moment like that, you're mentally strong and just able to go out there and enjoy it. So I would say West Point obviously was a huge factor, and just a big maturity phase for me as well. And I think that just set me up really well.
And the last thing is, when you get the call up and you get it through the excitement, are you really like, give me the scouting reports, give me this stuff, I want to start digging in on this?
100%. We've done that all the way through and through the minor leagues. So obviously in high A and double A, it was a couple less players that we were scouting and going over, just so then we kind of got the idea of what to look into, how we should attack certain guys, and also still being able to trust your best stuff. Even if a guy is really good at handling this pitch or this pitch, he's never seen you. And, you know, if his results are good off of other guys' changeups, might not necessarily mean he's good off your changeup, especially if you execute the pitch in the right location. So, as you went up in the minor leagues, you go through more of the hitters, learn a little bit more, and it's a little bit more in depth. And then obviously getting up here, it's going through the whole lineup, because, you know, everybody's
a lot more information.
Yeah, a lot more information, and every guy up here is a big leaguer. I mean, everybody's really damn good, so you just got to go out there and trust your stuff and execute your pitches. And sometimes, you know, you're just trying to have them get themselves out.
But that's the thing, is that you have the information, but ultimately you can't forget, like, I have good stuff. Like,
yes, sir.
They have to beat me.
Yes, sir.
You know, that, you know, I don't know if that's a mindset you came into that game, like, that you kept reminding yourself, yeah, I got all this information, but they have to beat me. They have to beat my stuff because it's good.
Yeah, I think not only was it myself telling me that, but just going over everything with the catchers, with the coaches, with the other guys on the team, they helped me feel, you know, like I was part of this right off the jump. And just knowing that if I throw the game that I'm able to throw, I can go out there and compete at any level. And I think they did a really good job, you know, helping me feel that, not only just internally, but also them telling me, you know, like, we've seen enough. You've done a good job. Just go out there and trust your stuff, and, you know, let the chips lay where they may.
Okay. Don't let these slobs make you forget where your roots are from. You know?
Sir.
Good job.
Yes, sir. Thank
All
you.
Right. It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly,
you know,
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.